Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. On each episode, we explore different aspects of the world of music, including concert reviews, this week in music history, and what we are bringing you today, a album review. Along with me is, of course, my friend and co-host, Greg Harvey.
Hello, Brian.
And today, Greg, we have a very special guest.
Oh, yeah? Who's that?
The album that we're about to review?
Yes.
Yes. We've got a guy who's on the album.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to present to you our guest now, a friend of ours here as a St. Louis radio personality, a great comedian, as well as a member of this very band. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Tim Convey.
Just the keyboardist, unfortunately, so I'm sorry. I'm the only one who lives in town. I'm the best that you guys could do, but I am happy to be here.
Well, we are totally St. Louis based, yes. So it's awesome that we have you on the show today.
Also, I mean, you say that you're just the keyboard player. Well, we're just two drummers, so I mean,
you know. It's true.
Better
it's true.
A drummer than a keyboard
yeah,
player.
So that's it, whenever I do an album review, I tend to actually listen to the drums a lot, just and so if I make comment on the drums, like, no, that's where I'm coming from.
I love it.
Of which I will just say this, that that Matt is like a far superior drummer than I will ever be.
He's pretty exceptional.
We're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
We are getting a little ahead of
ourselves,
because
I definitely want to go crazy about how good your drummer is as well.
Oh, thanks.
But I think, for starters, so today we're celebrating, it's been a little over 10 years since the release of your album You're Awful, I Love You.
Yeah.
First off, how do you feel? It's been 10 years.
Yeah. God, I guess it's been 11, because I think it came out
February. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So close. We're approaching 11. How does it feel? It's weird. It's crazy. I mean, we just did a reunion show back in October. So it was 10, that year marked 10 years since the record came out. And it was so great. We hadn't played a show in 6 years. And so it was a whole lot of just nostalgic, you know, we hadn't been in a room together in 6 years. So not only spending time with each other again, but also remembering that album, because it not only, the album that we made 10 years ago and something we're proud of, but that was the one that, you know, the successful things that did happen with our band happened then, and happened very quickly.
Yes.
And happened in that year. That 2008 was just this insane blur for us. Where all kinds of great things happened. You know, we went from being this like regional, like, oh, people will come see us play in cities in the Midwest, and we can play to, we've built this fan base where we have a couple hundred people in a few different markets, and to just like, we're on the radio, we're showing up in towns we've never been in, so shows are sold out. It was
you're on
it
a
was
house a, promo.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Exactly.
That's TV. When I knew you made it.
It was a wild, wild year. So it was just cool for us to kind of revisit that and revisit it together. It was fun.
Can I also piggyback on that by saying that we here in St. Louis, we're exceptionally proud of you guys for getting that success too, because I always tell people that Ludo is the best band in St. Louis, like, since, what, frickin' Mama's Pride. Like, you know, you guys, you came in at this right time, and you really sparked something great with the people here, and then with people further out from the St. Louis area. And it was impressive to see.
Yeah, we were It you know, again, the story, it never gets written exactly the way you want it to, but I think we're very grateful that we got to do so much on our own. I mean, you start a band and you probably want to get signed the next day. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I think we did. That wasn't in the cards for us, but we're so grateful for it, because by the time 2008 rolled around, we had learned a lot, became a much better band, and we had built something we were very proud of in St. Louis. And so there were so many people that got to feel like they were a part of that success. And again, it was, you know, in the grand scheme of things, very mild success, but we got to do a lot of cool things, and it was fun to kind of have our hometown behind us.
Cool. So, you know, kind of taking us back to the album here, 2008, where was your head at going into this one?
So it's funny. So we signed our record deal in October of 2006, and then we're in the studio.
And that was with Island, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could give you the whole backstory on everything and tell you exactly where my head was. But, you know, I mean, I'll try to do a short version. We started the band kind of summer of 2003. Tim Farrell and Andrew Volpe, the guitarist and singer-guitarist, had been playing together as Ludo for a little bit when they'd both be kind of home from college. They recruited me. I joined. We got the other guys, did everything on our own, put out the first record on our own, put out Broken Bride on our own, toured the Midwest, kind of did it all ourselves. And then all of a sudden, you know, we were drawing a pretty good amount of people in different places in the Midwest. We were selling a good amount of records for an independent band. got a bunch of labels interested, did the showcase for everybody, blah, 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 blah. You know, did the flying around and showcasing and crazy, you know, dinners and all that, and ended up on Island Records. So ended up signing October 2006. We're in the studio January 2007. So, and then the record didn't come out, you know, for a full year, which is all this crazy major label stuff and, you know, whatever. But it all worked out. And we worked with Matt Wallace. So,
I was looking at his credentials there, and he's got a long list of bands that he's worked with.
Yeah. So, and if we're, I mean, if we're going to break down the record, like Matt Wallace, it was just such a big part of it, and we ended up with him. You know, we were so excited to have signed the deal, and it just felt like all these different things could happen, and every decision seemed so important, especially who was going to produce it, where we were going to do it, all these things. Mm-hmm. And so we talked to a bunch of different people, and we're, you know, had a handful of people interested, and the label wants you to meet with this guy and that guy and the guy who's, he's hot this second and whatever. And Matt Wallace was brought up by somebody, and you know, you looked, and he was cool because he'd done a wide variety of things even at that time. So his biggest success was the first Maroon 5 record, Songs About Jane, which is like,
was huge.
Such a great record. Songs are insane. Fantastic. Incredibly popular at radio. And just a great sounding feeling record. He started his career, he produced the band Faith No More. He did all of their stuff. He came up with those guys, and that was his thing. So when Ludo started, the first cover song we ever played was Epic by Faith No More. And we played it from, you know, right when our band started all the way up through. We played one at the reunion show the other. Like, that was, we played different covers at different times, but Epic was always a part of our band. From before we even played a show, we were covering that song, and it was always a part of what we did. So it was so weird that the guy that produced that song was in the mix.
What are the chances?
It was crazy. So he flew out to a show. He saw us play at the Metro in Chicago, and then we had a drink with him afterwards and just connected with him completely, and he was our guy. And we actually, in those sessions, recorded a version of Epic.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because he wanted, it just felt like we kind of should, and he was super excited about it, and we hated how it turned out, and it didn't make the record, and I hope no one ever hears it. But it was
so still, there's the lost track out there somewhere.
Oh, there's a few lost tracks from those sessions, to be honest. So it was cool, but it was cool to record that song with that guy. So anyway, he's a big part of it.
Wow.
Nice.
Well, I suppose we should probably get into some of the music here.
Well, I just wanted to give like a little bit of my personal backstory as far as like this band is concerned first, okay?
Okay, we're connecting it from the head to the heart here.
Yes, okay. So I found out about Ludo because of my brother. My brother is a couple years older than me. You've met my brother on numerous occasions. And he basically walked into my room one day, handed me Broken Bride, and was like, listen to this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, fine. I listen. Whenever Jamie tells me to listen to something, I will listen to it because he's got good taste in music. I listened to it. It blew me away. It's still one of my all-time favorite albums. It's just, it's a brilliantly worked piece of music.
Thanks.
But more so than that, a couple years later, you guys did like the Broken Bride, like, tour kind of thing where you played the album in its entirety. I was at that show in here in St. Louis, and I have said people numerous times that this is my favorite show that I've ever been to because it was Without a Face, Meese, Haha Tonka, and then you guys closing it out.
That's a lineup.
So I ended up actually chatting
wearing a Haha Tonka t-shirt right now.
See, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
So I ended up chatting with Without a Face for like an hour, like with that show. Ended up buying Meese's album, and it is still one of the best power pop albums I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I ran into Patrick Meese a couple years later because he is now the drummer for Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats.
Right.
And so he was really ecstatic that I actually had the album and he signed it for me.
Oh,
so
that's awesome.
And I still follow Haha Tonka. They still kill every single time they come to St. Louis. And then, of course, you guys playing Broken Bride, like, at the end there. Fantastic.
That's
my
awesome.
Favorite show that I've ever been to.
Cool. Yeah, that was 2009, probably.
Yep, somewhere around there. And I went there with my brother as well, and it was just an all-around perfect
night.
That's
awesome.
So, and I've been to, like, thousands
of
concerts.
A lot of shows,
so,
yeah. That was a fun...
Quite a few.
That was a fun tour, and we just had a really good time on that tour. And then Without a Face, so we put that record out. So Tim Farrell and I produced that, his second record, and so that was a fun tour.
On another side note, that dude getting up there on stage, and he commanded that audience like so well. I've never seen a solo act like do that before. Blew my mind.
Yeah, he's pretty great. People should check that out, Without a Face.
Without a Face.
And because I get nickels every time we sell something.
But yes, so let's actually get into this album. This is obviously You're Awful, I Love You. It was released February 26, 2008, and let's see, under Island, it says Island / Redbird Records, and producer Matt Wallace, as we've said before. The main album has, 12 total tracks and a 13th hidden track.
Mm.
I didn't know about that until today.
Aren't there two hidden tracks?
There might be. I don't know.
Which hidden track are you referring to?
This one says The Boat Song.
Yeah, so there's one there. I think there's one at the end of the last track, and then isn't there one if you put the CD in and rewind?
Yeah, it's in the pre-gap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Goodbye Bear.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's that was on there? Okay.
That's what, yeah.
I forgot.
That's what Wikipedia says, so
well,
that's what I'm going with.
You know, we're coming at it from, hey, most people are going to listen to this on CD, and so there, you do that stuff, but a lot of it gets lost in digital, and it's weird to even think about that.
That
so,
pre-gap
yeah.
thing, though, like, I never knew about that until I picked up Songs in the Key of X, which was the X-Files, like, not soundtrack, but it was, like, songs that were kind of inspired the writers, and it skipped backwards, and then we found that there were two hidden songs.
Yeah.
And you had to go backwards, like, 6 minutes to listen to them.
Because we grew up listening to, you know, 90s stuff, and that, like, everybody was playing tricks and stuff. So do you remember the band Cracker?
Yeah.
Their album Kerosene Hat, which is their big one with, like, Low and all that stuff on it. And they, you put it in and there were 99 tracks and you had to find which ones had songs on them. But stuff like that was so cool. So we were excited to do stuff like that.
Well, always love, like, those Easter eggs that you can fit in there. Honestly, I didn't even know about the pre-roll.
Really? Yeah.
No. You know,
so Goodbye Bear is the pre-roll, and then the hidden one is
The Boat Song.
The Boat Song, which is so Tim Farrell guitarist wrote and sings that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Goodbye Bear was another just kind of chunk that we didn't put anywhere else and really liked it, and it ended up. So, yeah, if you have the CD, you rewind, and it's there.
There you go, if you didn't know it.
Yeah. Order that CD off Amazon if you don't have it yet.
Yeah.
All right, but let's actually get into the album itself so we can go through some of these tracks.
And, I mean, the first track, it's kind of a big deal, Love Me Dead. So, you know, this was probably the first music video I saw when I walked into the cafeteria at SIUE.
Oh, wow.
I walked in there, and that was, like, my very first impression of college. So that's the association that you get with me, to make a long story short. But I'm more interested more about the just kind of the traction that this single took, because this was the first single off the album, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is crazy. So here's the deal. So we did, like I said, in 2003, we did our first record, the self-titled album, and we recorded that before we ever played a show. And then in 2005, we made and put out
Broken Bride.
So when we did the first record, we put those songs on there. Then we started writing songs as we were on the road and accumulated quite a few. We knew that we wanted a label to release our next thing. So we had accumulated songs, and Love Me Dead, quite honestly, was one of the first songs we wrote after the first album. Then Broken Bride came about. Then Broken Bride had this other song, Save Our City. And then we were like, okay, we've got all these songs. We don't want to release without a label. So we're like, what if we just pursue this Broken Bride idea and put that out? So that's what we did. So a lot of those songs that ended up on You're Awful, I Love You, existed even before the Broken Bride songs, and Love Me Dead was one of those songs. Love Me Dead was written shortly after the first album was recorded. So Love Me Dead's been around since 2003, I guess, and didn't get released until 5 years later, which is crazy. So that was a song that we played that was very much a part of our live show for a really long time, and people reacted to it a lot. And so when it came down, when we did the whole album, though, it was time to pick singles with the label. The label really wanted Drunken Lament, which is a song that I remember at least thinking, like, this is such a Ludo song. Like, it felt like, it just very much felt like that's what we do.
That's awesome.
It's weird and quirky. It's got some strong, you know, tongue-in-cheek lyrics. And so the label, L.A. Reid was running the label at the time, and that's the one that he really reacted to. But we knew the reaction that we had seen with Love Me Dead over and over. And, you know, we're young and just, this was our shot. And that's part of what I was talking about. Like, we had been Ludo for 5 years. So by the time we had the label and had all these big mechanisms around us, we kind of knew what we were doing. We knew how to connect with people. And so we sort of pushed to make Love Me Dead the single. And to Island's credit, they were all for it. They listened.
Well, and when you guys are on stage and that's the song that everybody's going crazy for,
yeah,
you know?
For sure. But you know, it's funny. You hear a lot of just horror stories about major labels and stuff. And you know, everything with that record, we were pretty fortunate. And so they said, yeah, let's make it the single. So we're all, now keep in mind, it had been recorded in 2007 and we were like, let's put this record out. So then we're touring like crazy and we can't wait for this new music to come out. And so we put Love Me Dead out early and then we got to do a video ourselves. So we did that, the toothbrush
video.
Yeah,
the toothbrush one.
So that came out long before we then recorded the real thing. And then the single was, you know, eventually taken to radio.
Wow. Well, here it is. The first track on your awful I Love You, Love Me Dead.
Love me cancerously, like a salt sore soaked in the sea. High maintenance means you're a gluttonous queen, narcissistic and mean.
Love Me Dead. It's Ludo, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. I got to say, that song actually has one of my favorite lines, and that is, you're born of a jackal.
You're beautiful.
It's just the way he sings it, you know. It's like, you were born of a jackal.
Yeah, it's you get a real taste of, I mean, that's another one that is sort of all things Ludo kind of crammed into one thing. It's theatrical and funny, and it's some of Andrew's, you know, strongest stuff, and he's a, you know, as I think, as good of a lyricist as is out there, and a lot of it's in that song.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. His ability to craft a narrative in a song is top notch. I mean, I don't think I've ever come across anybody else that sort of composes a song like him.
Yeah, he's pretty gifted, and he, you know, we always said from the beginning, and it was an Andrew thing, is that it was these albums were supposed to be like, each song was like a little mini movie. That was kind of his philosophy in putting a lot of it together. And I think he, you know, succeeded.
That makes a lot of sense.
As we were
too.
Listening to that, so we did, like I said, that song exists for a long time. So there was a version of that song that we recorded here in St. Louis that kind of existed forever. And then we then redid it with Matt Wallace. And I just remember, especially the ending, how it builds so much and all the dot, dot, dot. That was all, you know, we knew we needed to kind of take it home at the end. And that was the biggest difference between sort of the first version of it and then, you know, what's on the album.
Nice.
I love like the simplicity kind of like the plucky guitar part too at the beginning. Like,
it's instantly recognizable as a hook.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
And it's fun. It shows too, because that's, you know, our most popular song. So it's just fun because it just those two first things and everybody, you know, knows what it is.
Well, the next song on the album, as we mentioned a minute ago, is actually my personal favorite, Drunken Lament. I think the reason why I love it so much is kind of the build towards the end as well, especially the drum part, because by the end of the song, like, you guys are going nuts. It's all over the place, and the double bass pedal is going crazy. So, as anything, you kind of ran through some of the basics on Drunken Lament. You said that this was kind of the one they wanted to market as the single.
Yeah, and it was, again, so I remember, I don't really remember exactly where we wrote this one, but I remember it coming together, at least, in a rehearsal space here in St. Louis. And, really feeling like that's a Ludo song. Because by this, that... I feel like this was written after Broken Bride. I could be wrong. But and I just remember there's a lot, like, really taking some hard gulps before some of these key parts, because I do, you know, Tim Farrell and I harmonize that solo at the beginning, and it's some of that. It was me, you know, pushing myself, or I should say the rest of the band pushing me to kind of do more. so I remember that, and then the Rhodes stuff that I do on the verse, and so, I mean, yeah, some of my memories are all the key stuff, but... Yeah, it's a fun one. And like you said, just that what Matt does on that bridge and then all the way through the ending is so fun.
And one of the best parts about the band dynamics when you have other guys there that kind of influence your style and push you to do something different. Because, like, you know, our listeners know that Brian and I are both drummers. And, you know, when I got into my first band, I kind of just had my own style. Mm-hmm. And these guys are like, well, we're really trying to do this thing. And I went home every day, just studied, got into it, and... the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny, and I don't think he'd care me sharing this, but so Matt Palermo, when he, basically we were together and we were auditioning people because we needed a rhythm section, and we put out ads and classifieds all over the country. And then people came down to, we were living in Tulsa at the time, came down to Tulsa to audition, and Matt at the time was in a hardcore band. And he was, Matt was only 19, and that was kind of his whole world. The music hardcore and like kind of 311 and Metallica and then like hardcore. And that was what he knew. So it was really, man, him coming in the band, and, but being so incredibly talented and kind of figuring out exactly what the songs took, and then watching him discover even simple things, you know, like the Beatles. And now I'd say he has the widest taste of anybody in the band.
Drummers often do.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I stole one of my patented drum riffs from this very song, too.
Oh, did you really?
So, yep.
Nice. There's some good, some tasty ones.
Well, let's check it out. This is Drunken Lament.
That was Drunken Lament. That is a great song.
That's a fantastic song.
And it just gets bigger and better towards the end.
So. That was the first one when we were doing the reunion that I was like, all right, that was my first kind of project.
Yeah.
We played it a bunch and it was tricky. And I was like, that's how I kind of got my fingers back used to playing music again.
Like the chorus of that song, I don't know. My first favorite song off of this album was Lake Pontchartrain, mm-hmm. I think because of the story kind of that it tells. But this became my new favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And just the chorus that I'd ride in your pocket all day, but I just don't fit. Like, it's like there's a little bit of like, damn it, I just don't fit. Otherwise, I would. And like one of my best friends, he absolutely loves this song. And just the darkness that you guys insert into some of the music, it's for a personality like his, he likes a little bit of the dark kind of macabre.
Yeah.
And you guys are right up his alley.
And I think there's a lot of that in what we do. You know, certainly some of the other songs we'll get into, and then some of the stuff on the next album too, some dark stuff, but obviously super funny, goofy stuff too. I think it's super funny.
Yeah.
And we always talked about how that, you know, and again, I give Andrew all the credit on that stuff, but we always talked about how like that's how people are. That's how human beings are, you know, and we always talked about, especially at that time when we came out, like alternative music at the time, there was all this dark, angry, brooding stuff. And you see these guys and the look was dark and the live show was dark and the albums were this. And it's like, dude, you're my age. You also grew up watching Saved by the Bell. And
yeah.
Now everything in your personality is as if you didn't, but you did.
Yeah.
You know, and the human beings are, there's a just a broad spectrum of emotions, and you can be dark and you can be creepy and you can be funny. And yeah. I, you know, again, I give give all that to credit to Andrew. But
I know we grew up listening to ska and punk.
Spoiler.
Really.
Yeah.
So, like, that's for me, like, I've always gravitated more towards the happy music.
Yeah.
And you guys, like, really are great at walking that line between, like, dark and happy.
Yeah.
It blows my mind sometimes, actually.
Thanks, man.
Well, this next track off the album kind of takes it to a different dimension of the band as well. This one is called Please.
That is a great chorus. I love how it changes time signature. Like that, I always love it when bands do that.
Well, it was even more, jumped around even more in the first verse. That's another song that existed before Broken Bride. And it was the timing on the verse that there was an extra beat in. It was really kind of quirky. And that was the thing Matt Wallace was like, you've got a great, you know, sort of rock song. You got a great pop. You got a great kind of rock ballad here. And, you know, maybe you're getting too cutesy with it. And
yeah.
We fought it. And but in the end, he was right and made it easier for me to play my part correctly. Yeah, so it got a little bit more. But yeah, it's just a big, you know, ballad. And I love that one because I got to play both keys at one, my top keyboard and lower one.
Now, were you the guy in the band that like had all the time signatures down, or were you the guy in the band who was like, hold on a second?
Latter, man. Yeah. I mean, the other guys in the band are far more skilled, studied musicians than I am. I was in bands all growing up and stuff, but this is the first time I ever played keys. I mean, Andrew,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know if you guys know the story, but Andrew kind of decided I was going to play keys in Ludo.
Wasn't it? They just didn't need another guitarist.
Yeah, I sang in bands. They had a singer. I kind of play guitar in bands. They had a guitarist, so they're like, "You're going to join Ludo." And I'm like, "You don't need me." He's like, "No, you're going to play keys." I don't play keys. You're going to, and that's sort of what happened. So next thing I know, they spent thousands of dollars on this Moog synthesizer, and I was like, oh man, I guess I have to learn this thing.
I actually remember one time when at one of the shows, I don't remember who opened for you, but during your set, you actually said, it's like, there have already been two better keyboard players than me up here tonight, so it's like, don't expect much.
That's funny. Boy, I'm hilarious, huh, guys?
You are funny.
All right.
I like that one.
We got another trademark song off this album.
This one is my favorite album, or my favorite song on the album, actually.
Okay. It's funny because I don't remember the order, so I don't even know yet.
It's Topeka. I love actually the first line. Like, I found God in a catalytic converter in Topeka on a Monday night. And like, that just, I don't know why, but that is such a descriptive line. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
So this is actually my favorite song on the album.
I found God in a catalytic converter in Topeka on a Monday night. I taste blood every time I think of summer. If that's true, I'm in for quite a treat. 'Cause I'm begging for the sun in a mid-Missouri winter, waiting desperately to get out of town. No, you can't keep a good man down. till midnight. Consider what you might have found. You think you've got a good thing now. I found God in a catalytic converter in Topeka on a Monday night. Every saint has a past, every sinner has a future, so you know.
Appreciate you leaving that Moog in there for me. There.
That's when we know that the song's in full effect.
Exactly.
You gotta wait for that part.
So that one was written by Tim Farrell, our guitarist, and Andrew writes most of the songs. And Tim wrote that one, and that, I mean, literally our van broke down in Topeka, Kansas. There was a problem with the catalytic converter, and I feel like he wrote that the next day. And that was another one that we played for a long time. It was just a part of our set long before we recorded it. And yeah, you guys are saying it gets quoted quite a bit. So the chorus, the every saint has a past, every sinner has a future, is an Oscar Wilde quote that I think people attribute to us all the time. Well, they'll get tattoos. And
you guys are so wise.
Great artist copy, or a good artist copy, great artist steal. So.
Yeah. But yeah, I do. I love that one.
Well, this next song, I don't really know how to put it. It almost feels like a horror theater to me. Lake Pontchartrain. Mm. What the heck is up with this song?
How did this one come about?
What?
Yeah, I mean, all I can do is say, if you've ever met Andrew, just a few minutes into meeting him, you kind of get where a lot of Ludo stuff comes from.
Sure.
And this
never met him.
Oh, yeah? Oh.
I think I shook his hand maybe once.
Oh,
but
nice.
Yeah, I've never actually had a conversation with him before.
He's a great handshaker, too. He's a writer, and he tells stories, and this is sort of one of them. So I remember putting this together in Houston, Texas. So when we knew it was like time to write for this record, we spent a couple weeks in a bunch of different places. So one of them was Houston, Texas. One of them was Tonganoxie, Kansas. And one of them was outside of Madison, Wisconsin. Different like family or friends, and we would just go to somebody's place for 2 weeks and just write, and rehearse, full band rehearse and stuff. And so this one I remember putting together in Texas, and we were in Matt's parents' really hot garage, kind of playing it and putting it together, and sort of, Andrew, kind of the story sort of evolving, and us doing all, all the vocals and the ahs and the, and just kind of picturing it. And it's, I love it. It's probably my favorite song to play live.
That's what I needed to know is, like, what was your reaction after the first time you heard it and it was done and it had all the production value and it had just the kind of, for me, like an overwhelming feeling of sound and emotion. It's crazy.
A lot of times you hear the complete product for the first time of a Ludo song, you're like, oh man, is that too much? And this is probably one of those, but the answer
is
usually
perfect.
No. Yeah.
This
is
perfect.
There's always that push and pull between it, but I love the way it turned out. I remember doing those vocals too and be like, now we'll yell in this part of the room and now we'll go over here and now we'll do this.
And with a live crowd, it's amazing to hear them all yell out, come down to Lake Pontchartrain.
Yeah, it's fun.
And I think that's what makes like the sessions fun too, to kind of have those moments to bring a little more energy in, because, typically it's one person doing their thing at a time, right?
Yeah.
Maybe, yes.
Also,
the vocal sessions?
I was gonna say, I've never done, like if you're laying down a bass part,
oh,
it's just a dude in a booth, right? Or out in
No, so we would do we would track everyone play together live, right? And then you say, okay, you're basically going for drum tracks.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But then hopefully you get a lot of bass too. And then sometimes you're like, that scratch guitar sounded great, or we'll use, whatever else. And then sometimes you're just like, okay, cool, we got the drums. And then, the bass player goes back in, whatever. But this was, it depended on different things. Sometimes it was
sure.
Like that, a lot of that felt good. And then you keep it, and then you just maybe do some overdubs.
Yeah. Well, either way, it results in track 5, Lake Pontchartrain.
Happened, it was Darius and no one in me. Just a few poor boys trying to get up out of misery. Took 50 by the Louisiana, stopped by the highway to eat. They both had crawfish, strictly chicken for me. Back out under Thunderheads, the radio was Southern Soul. They interrupted Clarence Carter with a strange ass local show. Was coming down, the wind was howling outside a slide down. It was the kind of night that makes you think the whole world's going to hell. We got up on an exit because we couldn't read the map so great. Hit a Choctaw motel, we parked to deliberate. When out of the bayou came a man like the lake had a tongue. He was right upon the glass, all yellow.
We can't listen to the whole song, Brian.
Sorry. I wanted to. That'd be super nice. I would like to point out that Lake Pontchartrain is a very nice lake. You should go and visit it sometime. It's very large and not at all deadly.
Yeah, but don't eat. Don't
unless
eat,
you drown.
Yeah, don't eat crawfish is the moral of the story.
I think there my only Lake Pontchartrain reference is The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Oh.
Because he grew up on Lake Pontchartrain. It was beautiful from the movie, though.
That I didn't actually remember. I'm sorry.
Well, we have a guest in studio, the member of Ludo itself, Tim Convey, also a great radio personality here in town and a great stand-up comedian. Do you have any socials you want to give out while you have a chance here?
Sure. The website is timconveystuff.com, and then my socials are all at Tim Convey, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. And then you can follow the band. It's Ludo Band on Instagram, and then Ludo Rock on Twitter and more on Facebook as well.
And just type in Ludo on Facebook. Well, Ludo Band on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get all kinds of other stuff.
Which, I mean, I'm sure we tend to have, we anticipate an audience that doesn't always know exactly what's going on. We like to think we're sometimes introducing people to new music.
We have an entire
Ludo
show dedicated to that called What Are We Listening To?
That is true. That is true. The name behind Ludo.
Oh, yeah. So there's a movie called Labyrinth, an 80s movie directed by Jim Henson, the Muppet guy. And it stars Jennifer Connelly, David Bowie, and a whole bunch of Muppets. And one of those Muppets who's sort of the sidekick to Jennifer Connelly, the protagonist, is a character named Ludo.
There you go. So now the argument is done. You have heard the name before, if you didn't know.
Yes, that is true. They stole it.
All right. Well, we got a few more tracks on this album, we'll keep moving. This next one is called Such As It Ends.
And the caves, your postcards hit me in waves, sadly stinging me with songs from yesterday. But such as it ends, breaking the hearts that wouldn't bend, closes the doors you used to listen through.
All right, so that was Such As It Ends. I got to say, that was probably the one that I was like, wait, I don't remember this song.
I get it.
Least memorable Moog Park ever, yes.
I loved the intro, don't get me wrong. It was one of those ones because I listened to it this morning on my drive to work, and I was just like, I just don't remember this one. It's like, I'm sorry.
No, I definitely remember this song. And I honestly, I think your little Moog part at the beginning actually is what makes it so memorable, because instantly off the gate, that doot-doot-doot-doot, that's like the clave on your keyboard, isn't it? It's what it sounds like.
No, I mean, it's part of the Moog. It's just a weird, weird sound on there. But yeah, that one, we played it live for a little bit, but not long. And it just kind of, you know, I don't know. I like it. I guess.
it's a good song.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, it was one of those ones that, like, I had to listen to it again, and which was fascinating for me, because, you know, it's like I've listened to everything that you've done.
It's one of two on here for me that are kind of, I'm just not as passionate about as I am, you know.
Yeah, and we know how that goes. I mean, just sometimes you got those songs that you're like, I like this song a lot, and honestly, there's people out there that this is probably like their favorite song on the album too. Which,
man, I've flat out recorded songs, and then I went back to them like 15 years later, and was like, "Wait, I actually wrote this."
Yeah.
Well, our next one here is "Mutiny Below," which is one of my more favorite ones on the album. So I guess it's another love song. It's another Ludo love song. What else? I mean, is there any memorable moments behind any of these songs, really?
This is one that I don't feel like we played live much, to be totally honest. I mean, we must have played it live at some point. There were I don't know.
Are there songs you guys have never played live?
We played everything off the first two records. The last record, there are definitely songs we never played live. And this one, I don't remember. I guess we played this at some point. I don't know.
That's so funny.
Such as it ends, we played live for sure. This one, we probably did.
So if you've ever been to a Ludo show and heard this song, please get a hold of us.
Yeah, let us know. I do like that Moog, man. That's a great instrument.
I like it, too. Keeps me busy.
It always cracks me up, though, because I know people who still call it a Moog.
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't, right? When we first kind of talked about it, we were like, what? And then
our co-host, Jake, though, he was very adamant. He's like, it is a Moog.
It is a Moog, for sure. Yeah.
You will call it as such.
It is Moog. Yeah, that's a fun song, like I said. I remember playing it live, and the lyrics are, there's a lot of winking going on in the lyrics if you get a chance to read them and sort of decipher what that song's actually about.
All right.
Wait, Mutiny Below isn't about his heart?
No.
Okay. Fine. Just crushing my childhood here. That's so stupid, because I was well past childhood when I listened to this album.
Yeah, in 2008, man. Well, the next track on here is called Streetlights.
Oh, yeah.
Tim, what do you got for us?
I remember that one. Yeah, so I mean, the idea was just ultra acoustic, you know, like super. There was so much production and layers and stuff on songs like Lake Pontchartrain and a few others that this one was supposed to kind of be the other end of the spectrum.
You had to balance it out.
So as thick as other Ludo songs, but more acoustic and organic, you know. So I didn't play any Moog on here. And then I'll have to listen. I definitely play Melodica on this one. And then I don't even know that I play any other keys, to
What's
be honest.
What's Melodica?
With you. It's that thing you blow into, and it's a
key. Oh, yes. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I've seen those before.
Yeah. So I did a lot of, I remember running out of breath playing on this. And Tim Farrell did a lot of cool stuff with a lot of different kinds of guitars. There's a lot of strings on here that he was plucking, and then just random instruments. Matt Wallace has such a cool studio. And we did it, we haven't talked about this, but we did it at Sound City in Los Angeles. So that's where we did the main tracks. And then we went into Wallace's smaller studio. But Sound City,
the famous one,
the documentary, Foo Fighters put out a documentary about it. And, you know, Nirvana did Nevermind there. And, and Tom Petty recorded there. Mm-hmm. And Rage Against the Machine and Fleetwood Mac. And it's pretty, that was just a pretty, and Weezer. It was a pretty wild experience. So anyway, but yeah, this one I just remember, the idea was to be as big as a Ludo song, but with sort of acoustic instruments. And I think the song itself, I think Andrew did a killer job. And it's another one, it paints a picture. It feels like a movie. You can kind of visual, there's so many visuals in it. It's real descriptive. And yeah, I like this one.
All right, let's get to it. This is Streetlights.
When the streetlights come on the pooling night, is levied aside and pressed in twilight against our two rooms, I'll see you tonight. The pavement is aching, cicadas are crying. The wine-colored air, breathing thoughts through your hair, breezing to me, leading me there. I come alive as the shadows parade. My heart's song. In floods and in waves, curbside confessions, no longer afraid of what you'll say. And I find you, twilight beyond all the cars and driveways they sleep, but streetlights will keep over me, they flicker like stars, and now the secrets.
That was Streetlights. You're listening to Follow the S- No, I'm kidding. I'm not gonna do that. That is a very sentimental song.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, without diving too much into all, you know, because they're Andrew's sort of stories to tell and stuff like that. But it came from kind of a personal place. And yeah, I like that one.
Yeah.
Well, this next one definitely features a lot of Tim Convey on it. And it also has my name in it.
That's right.
Which I don't know how I feel about that yet. But what's the deal with Go Getter Greg? I feel like this is a very unusual kind of song.
It is. So this one, I very well remember Andrew playing this for us at his place at the time, and just all that he crammed in, the story he told, just, you know, he gave us like a verse and a chorus, and it was just like, wow, like we know who you're talking about. You know what I mean? Like
that kind of guy.
Yeah. And just the place where he was living at the time felt like the complex where this thing was taking place. And it was just like, wow. And it was also super fun too, you know, like the music was also great. It's
a fun kind of creepy.
Yeah, totally. And so that was just fun to kind of fill out musically and let it sort of drive. And then I love what the bridge does and the breakdown, and then it comes back and it's dark and weird, and you don't know if you're supposed to, you know, hate this guy or feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
And so this song, this is the only one on the record. So we recorded this. We did a whole session of demos, a lot of songs, not even demos, but just like we were just taking a crack at some of these songs. And we did five or six, and we re-recorded all of them except for this one. We kept the original. So we did it here in town in St. Louis at Sawhorse Studios. We combined two of our favorite producers, engineers that we'd worked with, Jason McIntyre, who's based here in St. Louis, and then Mark McCluskey, who's out in New York now, and did all these songs. And this one, I remember Matt Wallace just being like, yeah, we're not going to get any better than what those guys did on this one. Let's use that one. So that's what's on the record. This is the only one we didn't do in L.A.
It also shows a lack of ego on his part, just because he's like, nope, these guys did it great. we're sticking with this.
You're so right. And that, I mean, that's, I learned a lot from Matt Wallace, and that was one of them. He, the guy had done all these things, and he wasn't the guy that pointed to the gold record and said, this is how it's going to be, or platinum record. You know,
I put on my pants one leg at a time, but when I do,
right.
I make hit records.
Yeah, you're right. Complete lack of ego for him to just be like, that's strong, that's great. You know, because that's points off the record for him, whatever, but he wanted to make the best product.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was inspiring.
Let's get it.
All right, go get her, Greg.
Oh. Hello.
Get her, Greg?
Not that I've been checking.
Okay.
I also remember the beginning. I don't know if you hear the blinds, you know, just him.
Oh,
no, that was such a nice thing.
There was at Jason McIntyre's studio in St. Louis, the blinds on one of the studio windows, and Andrew's like, let me do this real quick. And I love it. I love that beginning because it all comes together.
It is. It's trademark. And it just sets the tone for the tale you're about to hear.
Yeah.
The video is hilarious,
hello.
Too.
So our buddy Scott Culver did really all our videos, and yeah, we had fun. He did the Love Me Dead video. He did.
Where was that actually filmed at, though?
Goodwill Hunting. In Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
Or at some pool.
Now, you even pulled off creepy in that video, too.
Oh, thank you.
It's a little bit harder for you, because, yeah. I mean, let's face it, you're the face.
I don't know about that.
Well, this next song is... I've had somebody literally come up to me before, like when we were listening to this, and just be like, dude, like, this is just so messed up. And he's like, but that's why I love it so much. So the song is The Horror of Our Love. And I mean, the lyrics are kind of like a lovingly grotesque, like, you know, shoving people in your mouth and grinding bones. And but I mean, it's all a metaphor. Obviously, but I think the thing that
is
makes
it?
Well, that's the thing that makes it so ludo.
Well, I doubt Andrew's talking about actually going out there and eating people.
Well, so, no, but what is he talking about?
Well, he talked a lot about with this song, and again, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I remember with this song, there's a Salvador Dali quote where he was talking about his wife and was saying, he loved her so much, if she died, he would consume her. He would eat her body.
Wow. Mm.
And I think that was something he thought about when doing this. So just you know, sorry.
Well,
it's a very, you know, there's a dark side to kind of love and the different lines and stuff like that. And again, it's Andrew's thing, but it definitely strikes a chord with people, I think, this song. And
yeah.
It's that just the intensity that you feel, and you know that it's combining just imagery with how much a passion that you feel for someone within a relationship or something.
And that's things that you guys constantly did.
Yeah,
the band's career is just. You blow up these metaphors into like fantastic stories, and I'm actually really surprised to find out that the whole like eating your bones and stuff is more of a literal sense than
well,
I even thought.
Just that it kind of came from sort of that idea and feeling that thing, and yeah, I don't know. And then he just puts such great imagery in the song, and then musically this was such a cool one, and just different. We all kind of had different ideas, and I always pictured it like there's a guy in a room playing the song on guitar, and then different doors behind him, and those doors open up at different times, and different things are coming in from those things.
That would have been the video, right?
But and I loved. I had such a good time with the key stuff on this, because some of it, you know, unlike Go Getter Greg, you know, it's you're playing lead and it's ba da da da. You can hear that thing, and this was much more another side of what the Moog does, which is just this ambient creates these textures and stuff, and I love the way it came together.
I'm a killer, cold and wrathful, silent sleeper. I've been inside your bedroom. I've murdered half the town. Left you love notes on their headstones. I'll fill the graveyards until I have you. Moonlight walking, I smell your softness. Carnivorous and lusting to track you down among the pines. I want you stuffed into my mouth. Hold you down and tear you open. Live inside you, love, I'd never hurt you. But I'll grind against your bones until our marrows mix. I will eat you slowly. The horror of our love. Never so much blood pulled through my veins.
Such a nice song. See, I like that. That I know it's crazy. I know there's a lot of crazy lyrics in it, but but it's such a nice song.
Yeah. It is. I like I Wake in Terror, Blackbird Screaming. I think that line always stood out to me, too.
There's you'd have to look for it online, but for people who are curious, Andrew wrote a real long sort of description, explanation of you know, where he was coming from, and it's real interesting. So keep an eye out for that if you are into those. Do you want to know more that I can
yes.
put in words?
Yes. To learn more, visit your local library. All right. Well, we're getting to the end here. We got two tracks left on just the 12-track release of Your Awful I Love You. This next one is called Scream, Scream, Scream.
A man is many things. Let's count them all tonight.
Yes, that was Scream, Scream, Scream.
Yeah.
I feel like this is kind of a good song for the end of the album. Is there any like additional thought that goes into the actual track order of an album?
Yeah, I actually got an argument with somebody about that the other day.
Fists were thrown.
When people listen to albums on shuffle, it drives me insane.
I hate that crap.
Same.
Those people who do that are certifiably insane, in my opinion.
They're really, made to go a certain order.
It throws me off. Yeah, bands spend a lot of time creating what that's going to be in the whole listening experience. And, you know, like back in the day with the A side and the B side of the albums. And so, 100%.
This is why we review whole albums on this show. Because I got sick and tired of being like, oh, this one song, it's great. I was like, well, what about the rest of the album?
Right. And you're trying to make people feel a certain way from start to end, and you make choices like, well, there's too much of this, and that's how you decide what songs are going to make it and what songs aren't. And so I can't pretend like I remember our exact thought process when we were laying it all out. But yeah, I don't know. I agree with you. It feels like a
it does
more towards the end start thing, and it's you know, Andrew, there was a someone in Andrew's life passed away, and it was this real, you know, there's so much other stuff going on. I think it's pretty clear in the lyrics, but you know, that's what it's about, that people are obsessed with everything else and all the little things in life or whatever, and somebody, you know, you lose a good person, and there's only so much sort of discussion or reflection on it, stuff like
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's brings us to our final track on the album here.
One.
I know. This one's called In Space, and it brings the album to a conclusion. So, you know, why In Space?
Yeah, I love this one, and it's not, you know, it's probably not one of the most popular songs from the record, but man, I just like the story. I mean, it's pretty straightforward in terms of it's a, you know, metaphor of the relationship, and certainly us always being gone from the road and away from our loved ones and you know, different relationships we had, you know, but just, it felt very Ludo to me. It's a love song, but with obviously there's an outer space element to it, and
yeah.
I really perfectly remember Andrew working on this one in Tonganoxie, Kansas, and it's sort of coming together and kind of his process of all the different things he wanted to try to, you know, the different metaphors to fit in, and then, man, I really remember all the Moog stuff in the layer. Certainly the end, we called it this Moog Symphony, and I worked on it for so long and couldn't wait for everybody to come in, and I used like all the different sounds that I could, and the ending it's, I really like as it fades off before that hidden track comes up. And then the, yeah, that's part of the second verse. So yeah, I really like this one.
I got to ask real quick, how much is the difference between like you coming up with your own part versus somebody coming over and being like, hey, here's what I had in mind and trying to teach you?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the songs came together differently, different, you know, so sometimes Andrew will be like, I got this thing and I hear everything. Like I kind of know what's happening, you know?
Mm.
And then sometimes it'd be like, I got kind of this idea, and we'd flesh it out together. I would say, you know, me being certainly when the band started, not a ton of keyboard experience. There was a lot of he and I sitting down and, you know, what he heard versus, the things I would try. And as we got further along, so the later the song was written, the more, you know, I worked on that. But, you know, we all had our different sort of roles, whether that was the big picture stuff or the smaller picture stuff. yes, it was different on different tracks.
Okay.
Nice.
Thank you for...
But it was cool, you know, with the exception of me. I mean, they're all, like, all three of my bandmates were guys who could, you know, sort of write every part and compose and whatever.
Yeah.
So I always felt like lucky to kind of do it and just happy to be along for the ride.
All right. Well, let's get to our last track here. This is In Space. Tim, have you ever been in space?
No, But I did. We shot a video for that where we went into the arch and we took one of the pods and then we played the song.
That's right. I have seen that one.
It's a fun one. And there's a fun Go Getter Greg video too, where we were in an igloo in Wisconsin playing Go Getter Greg. So.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I saw that
too.
One too. Yeah.
Madison, Wisconsin is my hometown. So
oh, really?
Good stuff. Yeah, you said you were outside of Madison for a bit.
Yeah.
That's cool.
What's it called? What's that town called?
I don't know. Never heard of it.
I'll come up with
it. I used to live in a town called Stoughton, another called DeForest, Sun Prairie, maybe?
Sun Prairie is exactly
Sun Prairie?
Where we were. Sun
right
Prairie,
on.
Wisconsin.
Okay, cool.
The Serginian family was there.
Wow.
And yeah, and now Nick lives in Cambridge. So he was our first tour manager ever, and we just moved into his family's house and wrote a bunch of songs. And yeah,
that's
Sun
cool.
Prairie, exactly.
Beautiful town, and yeah, my roots. So that's cool. I never even knew that.
I don't know. I'm from across the river, so I've always been here, but... Right. That is You're Awful, I Love You, and honestly, it's one of my favorite albums from the 2000s, just because. I mean, it's you guys were just a killer band.
Thank you. Well, they just had a show like a few months ago.
Yes, and it's kind of one of the things that is there a possibility of more like one-off shows like that in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. The last one, the reunion went, it was so great. It exceeded all our expectations. So in some ways it's like, that was fun. What if we could make this all work again? But in some ways it's like, what a great way to end it, you know, to kind of say, at the end, it's not a long story what exactly went on with us, but it sort of faded out. The last show we played, I don't think we realized at the time was going to be our last show. Mm. So it felt like such a good button. I mean, it just really, we had no idea that many people would care, just how into it everybody was.
The crowd was amazing. They knew every line to every song. They were singing everything and just like going crazy.
Some of the best Ludo fans from all over the country were there. I mean, it was it moved us. And I thought we like sounded pretty good. You know,
I kind of went into it thinking
we were going to be bad. And
I got to say, though, one of the highlights of the night for me, it had nothing to do with you guys, actually. It was just the interaction with other fans, because everybody was like, how'd you find out about Ludo? You know, what's your favorite album? What's your favorite song? It's like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, who's your bias? No, that's a K-pop reference. And it was all of us like kind of chatting with different groups of people about how your music has affected our lives. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was this great crowd.
It was such
people.
A positive experience. And we got to meet so many people. And I mean, we hung out after both shows and until everybody was out of there. And it was,
I booked it. I didn't hang out because I figured I'd run into you later
No, I don't blame you. But yeah, just such an incredibly positive thing. And we were so grateful for the people that came out. And it was so cool to have the people that were there with us from the beginning, you know, our families, but also some of the guys that spent time on the road with us, people that were in our lives so much at that time. It was so cool. And then to meet, reconnect with fans that we haven't seen in that long. It was so, so cool. So will it happen again? I flat out don't know.
That's
possible.
That's kind of the trippy thing for me, because like, you know, you guys broke up and you weren't even like really on my radar or anything. It's like, cause I hadn't seen anything from you guys or even like later on I ran into Matt when he was playing with Tommy and the High Pilots. It was great interacting with him for a little bit, just because like, as far as drummers go, I mean, he's one of the ones that I would aspire to be, but I never will be.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool getting to chat with him. And then, you know, out of the blue, I remember somebody referencing the Trip to the Lou podcast, which is recorded at my other primary job.
Yeah.
And they're like, and Tim Convey's on there. And I was just like, Tim Convey's on there. And he goes, yeah, he's in the conference room. And I was just like, Tim Convey of Ludo is in this office. And and the other producer's like, yeah, he's been coming here for like a couple months now. And I was just like, Tim Convey is here in the conference. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, that's crazy.
I think I did the same thing here at Entercom.
So yeah, it was kind of trippy for us. And I got to say that it has been absolutely amazing having you on, because I hope I'm not like fanboying out too much, because, you know, I mean, I've met a couple of other like super hardcore Ludo fans, and I don't think I'm at their level, but it was so nice. Because I'm a musician, and so like I really pay attention to what is being played and like how it's all fit together. And I mean, You're Awful, I Love You is such a well put together album.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing I said to Greg when we got together. I was like, this album is just so like well constructed. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. And it's such a treat too to have this conversation with you. So thank you.
Yeah.
Again.
You're the first person we've ever had on who is actually involved with anything of the recording process.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me. It was fun.
Yep. I know there's a lot of friends back home who are listening in who are probably super stoked and super jealous right now. So, hey guys. But yeah, so there we go. 10 years plus a little bit since You're Awful, I Love You. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Convey in the studio from Ludo.
You want to give details again for where people can find you or see a comedy show?
Check out the band, first of all. So Ludo Band on Instagram and then Ludo Rock on Twitter and, you know, just anywhere you're getting music, Spotify, whatever it is, look for Ludo, ludomerch.com. And then all my stuff is timconveystuff.com, T-I-M-C-O-N-V-Y. Twitter, Instagram, all that.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
I think it's perfect. It's just great. Hey, if
thanks,
you ever
want
to come on and review some other album,
I'll do it.
It's like,
do it.
You can pick the next one.
Yeah,
so
pick
it's not
your,
it's not
album.
Your own
Hell
thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
You pick somebody else's album.
I'll totally do it.
I know. I always make him listen to like ska or.
We take turns.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know, picking picking albums.
Pick
but
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, next time we get you on, that'll be fantastic.
Cool.
Once again, though, this has been Follow the Sound, and I truly hope that you have enjoyed this album review of You're Awful, I Love You. It was great having Tim Convey on. If you want to check us out on any of our social media platforms, please find us on Facebook at the Follow the Sound group or Twitter at iFollowTheSound. We will always interact with anybody who contacts us, and hopefully we get a good response from this one from the Ludo fans, because I'm going to share this sucker out. But I have been your host, Brian Kroc. Along with me has been Greg Harvey.
Go get her, Greg.
And Tim Convey.
Thanks, guys.
Remember, folks, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.